KB Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Massage and Wellness Weekend, Saturday, September 9th and Sunday, September 10th at the Oregon School of Massage in Portland. Massage and Wellness Weekend is a weekend of celebration of holistic living, community engagement, and massage. Free events including community education classes and continuing education for massage therapists. Again, that's Massage and Wellness Weekend, Saturday, September 9th and Sunday, September 10th at the Oregon School of Massage, 9500 Southwest Barber Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class, the only show of its type in Oregon or Southwest Washington. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host, and my guest, one of my guests tonight, is Alyssa Pagan, who blew into town in the last couple weeks from New York City, well, actually Minneapolis, and ended up participating on August 17th with dozens of transgender folk and allies on the Bureau of Labor Industries to demand an end to employment discrimination for transgender workers, to correct the rampant discrimination against trans people in the workplace. And Alyssa, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here.
You were a featured speaker at this rally. The Portland Mercury identified you as a Marxist feminist transgender activist. How did you get that reputation?
Yeah, I did not ask them to say that. I haven't been in touch with anyone there, so they did their own digging. I suppose I got that reputation because I'm really unapologetic about all of those things, and I practice what I preach.
There is a whole range of ways that trans people are degraded, humiliated, intimidated, and that has a tremendous impact on people's employment possibilities. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think we should be really cynical here. Under capitalism, the profit motive is primary. And if bosses, business owners realize, hey, most people don't like trans people. Most people think that they're a joke. Disgusting. Fill in the blank of all of the ways that we all know most people feel about trans people. If a boss has that understanding and they have a bottom line to look out for, well, guess what? They probably won't hire the people that they astutely recognized are dehumanized and demonized and scapegoated in society. So guess what, sisters and brothers? We're not getting jobs. Those jobs will go to cis people who have a better chance of selling the product to the customer base that the capitalist realizes needs to line their pockets and make their business function. So as long as the profit motive and private property more broadly is the name of the game and the global order, I think we are going to continue to see discrimination abound wherever the capitalist class thinks that they can get away with it. And this is where BOLI comes into play.
Yeah, we're going to be talking later on about this rally at the Bureau of Labor and Industries that was headed up by a young black trans woman named Brooklyn Clark, and we'll be interviewing her as well as part of this program. You are, Alyssa Pagan, you are a socialist, a member of the Socialist Alternative, and a believer in building workers' power. What's the connection between workers' power and trans liberation?
Yeah, I think that through collective struggle, more than anything else, and I'm pretty sure I will take this belief to my grave, collective struggle for justice more than anything else transforms the minds and hearts of ordinary people. I have seen and witnessed and facilitated many people whose minds have been transformed around issues relating to trans people and trans justice, as well as racial justice as well. And I think that it is so important for us to think very, very seriously about organizing ourselves as a class of people who are oppressed under capitalism. We do not make the decisions about how we produce, where we produce, who we produce for, and what we do with the profits. That none of that is in our hands. We have to grovel to a boss to pay us enough money, hopefully, so that we don't starve on the street. And none of us deserve that. So if we take seriously a project that would see the eradication of this horrendous reality that we're faced with, where people readily are refused housing and food, well, then I think we really might be onto something if we dedicate ourselves to a project like that. And I would argue that that project cannot feature profiteers. It must feature people who have the objective interest of making sure that everyone is taken care of, that everyone's basic needs are met. And I would also argue that transgender people specifically should be uplifted and supported, so that the shame that we all, well, I shouldn't say we all, but that I know I have, and so many of my trans sisters and brothers and siblings have experienced and still experience, often will keep us from getting engaged politically, because many of us assume that people just don't care to be around us, don't care to hear our voices, don't care to have sympathy for our plight. That is real. And I think it is incumbent on socialists specifically, who have a liberatory vision for our society and for this planet, to uplift and positively engage with trans people in the struggle, so that they know that the struggle for worker power, the struggle for socialism from below, is something that they have every right to participate in and grow collectively.
Thank you, Alyssa Pagan, celebrity from New York City. Come back to Portland again soon.
Somebody give me a job.
So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Labor Radio. We're talking about transgender employee discrimination, and I have with me Brooklyn Clark, who recently organized a rally at the Bureau of Labor and Industries, in which a number of demands were made about employment and employment discrimination for transgender people, against transgender people. But we're going to get into the specifics. But first, I want to talk with you, Brooklyn, about your journey. How did you get to this place? What happened to cause you to launch this campaign against bully?
Sure. I think what caused me and launched me into this campaign was Progressive. A little bit about me, bring me up to moving to Portland, Oregon. You know, I worked for the courthouse for 4 years with a judge and saw rulings in civil court where people were fighting over money. We did name and gender changes in that courtroom. We did marriages in that courtroom. We did Motion Fridays.
in that courtroom, and that was 4 years, and I got to see what happens in an actual courtroom. We picked juries in that courtroom, we took evidence and testimony, and so I got that experience 4 years. I moved to Portland, Oregon, presenting male, and I knew that there was something, and I wanted to be part of this movement in Portland, Oregon, of keep it weird, diversity, acceptance. And so I moved here in 2012. When I first moved here, I signed up with all the temporary employment agencies. I got jobs, some jobs. I worked for bad corporations and bad attorneys, so I left those jobs. But then I landed my dream job at the Bureau of Labor and Industries, fighting for civil rights. That was my dream job. That there's nothing to me that that could be as satisfying to get paid, but do and fight for the rights, the equality for people of color, people's religious rights, people's freedom of speech, people who are disabled to have. So, you know, it felt like I shouldn't be getting paid for this. I would do this for free. And I was very excited to do that. Perhaps too excited. I worked there for a month. They were very happy to have me. They got a recommendation from my judge, a reference. They got two letters of recommendation for me. A sparkling, gleaming record history that they had going in. 2 weeks after me working there, the attitude changed and the mood changed, and it changed because I told my supervisor on coffee walks that I was persuaded to go to. I don't drink coffee. I don't like coffee. I like spring water, and that's what I drink. I'm just a normal person. Whatever normal is, I have a 12-year-old daughter. I moved to Portland, Oregon, so she can get a decent education, and I could be my true self and for the diversity. I got my dream job. I'm feeling great, and I felt like I had a supervisor that understood diversity. And so I told her that I had challenges with my gender identity, had questions, and I thought, you know, this was when I was just beginning my transition. I believe that that's what was quote-unquote wrong with me all of this time, when I didn't know, you know, what was going on. I just, once I got around people in Oregon, once I found out that there was a term called transgender, once I understood what I was feeling inside, and I wanted to share it with somebody, I shared it with my supervisor at Boley, which might not have been the right decision looking back. But after I shared that with her, her demeanor changed. You know, she asked me, how could I be a Christian and be a transgender person? She asked me, did I think about my daughter? Or did I consider my partner at the time? And I would tell her that I had, you know, and these were things that were weighing on my heart. You know, I am a Christian, and, you know, I've definitely had many talks with God about why would you make me transgender? So 2 weeks after letting, you know, 2 weeks after employment, I let my supervisor know. The demeanor changed, and I ultimately lost my job at Boley. I had never been written up, had never been formally disciplined. The only kind of talking to that I had was my supervisor being concerned that I was working through my breaks. I was working too hard. I only took my lunch breaks, and that was it. I wanted to work. I didn't want to take breaks. So I was told that I need to take these breaks, and I told my supervisor that I would comply and I would take the breaks. However, I was fired 3 days later. Thursday, Friday, Monday. So, you know, Monday morning I was fired, and I had been taking the breaks.
So at that point, or shortly thereafter, you decided to file suit against Boley for discrimination on the basis of gender identity?
Not exactly. What happened after that was I got fired and I couldn't sleep. It was causing me challenges. I had already been going to... I'm going to put on pause. Okay, so what happened was immediately after being terminated, I couldn't sleep. My legal brain, I guess, kicked in and said, you need to document this, you know, kind of sort of like how Comey documented this speaks, you know, what happened with Trump. I had to document my thoughts, what was said, the occurrences, the history. I had to document it while it was fresh in my mind. And so what I did, I wrote a complaint. And I sent that complaint to the EEOC in, I believe, Seattle first. Seattle sent it to San Francisco. San Francisco sent it to LA, and LA ended up, the EEOC in LA ended up doing a lot of nothing. So then I got an attorney. I was working at an attorney's office, and so I got the partner who happened to practice civil rights law to help me. I think they're the ones that actually told me to go to the EEOC, and let's see if we can get some discovery. And, you know, it's a process. And I want your viewers to understand that to sue somebody for discrimination is not easy, you know, to prove it. Discrimination is more of a feeling more than an actual, like, here's the paper trail of documents or funds, you know. So the attorney said, let's get some discovery for free. Let's let EEOC do the work for us. And what EEOC came back with was they can either say that discrimination occurred or say that it didn't occur. They had a neutral stance. But the fact that they did their investigation allowed me to file a lawsuit. And so I did file the first lawsuit in the federal court downtown Portland about 2 years after being fired. It took that long for the EEOC to finish their case and tell me nothing, and they won't give me a lot of these internal documents even till today. They're claiming that they're privileged documents, that they're internal documents, they're attorney-client privilege. Everybody who works at Boley, that was my supervisor, they're all attorneys. So anything they say is attorneys between attorneys, and they're not clients, they're public servants, and so I should have access to that, but they don't want me to get access to what was the true reason that I was terminated. But I filed suit about 2 years after, going through the proper channels, I had to let the government know that it was my intention to sue. I had to go through the EEOC. I had to give certain notices, and it was a long journey to even be able to file suit in federal court about 2 years later.
And recently, Boley settled.
Boley settled on Friday, the day after we had our employment rally in front of them, where they said that they were doing everything right.
And you got a significant cash settlement.
I don't think that's significant.
All right, okay. So let's move. So that's your journey into discrimination activity, personal. But let's talk about what happened at. Well, first of all, I have to assume that this experience was what motivated you to generalize to the fact that transgender people are horribly discriminated against in the workplace, and sharing that with people in your support group, and deciding to have a rally and make some demands of Boley, not just about their own practice, but about general discrimination and protection and advocacy on behalf of transgender workers. So talk to us about the rally.
Okay. Well, you asked me, my personal experience is one thing. The knowledge, the...
Oops. Okay, here we go.
Okay, the there's another one. So what I guess pushed me into activism was stories I heard in group, experiences that I heard from other trans women at the Q Center, at Brown Brunch, which is a social group that I go to with queer and trans people of color, at the Tranimal Nature, which is a trans-only event for Native people of color, white people. It doesn't really matter. Trans people are kids and our adult and our parents. Family reunion. I mean, there's so many. Once I realized what was quote unquote wrong with me, when I realized that I was trans and that I wasn't, you know, I don't know, something wrong with me, once I realized there was nothing wrong with me, that I'm just a human being and this is my gender identity, I wanted to be around more people like me. I wanted to learn who my family members were, who my siblings are. And one thing that I found constant was the poverty and the need, the lack of. And so the way that I interpreted that was threefold. I think that we have a lack of housing, we have a lack of education, we have a lack of employment. I think that the one thing that the protection that we do have, I think that's where we're starting. We're starting with that we have protections in employment and we should be protected. And that's why we started at Boley, because we think that in Oregon, of all places, in Portland, Oregon, of all places, transgender people should be free to live, work, and play. But the story that I heard over and over and over and over again was not that. And then when it happened to me, a person who has worked in government, who believes that, you know, government leads the way and private sector follows, I was embarrassed. You know, I was embarrassed that they would be so blatant to discriminate or terminate with not a good cause on a whim. And they're the Bureau of Labor and Industries. That's the standard that they set for the state of Oregon. I was appalled. What happened to me was only like the cherry on top of what I've heard of my 5 years of being here and all the groups of women having to do sex work just to keep food on the table, you know. And these are people that are living in tents. They don't even have a place to go home to. Where are the training programs? Where's the education? You know, like if there was any compassion, we'd understand like to transition genders is a big undertaking. It takes some mental energy to figure out what's going on. Is this something, this is a life changer, you know? This is something that you really have to think about and say, is this a phase or is this something that is permanent, that I know? And so, you know, as a transgender person myself, I know that I definitely took the amount of time to transition and have my conversations with God and have my conversations with my family and have my conversations with myself and understand that this is my authentic self. It's not me trying to fit in. It's not a trend. It's not a temporary thing. And then on top of that, you know, I'm lucky. I went to college. I have a degree. You know, a lot of my siblings transitioned either early in high school or in college. Can you imagine going to college and transitioning? And transitioning at the same time with family telling you that you're no longer welcomed, your church rejecting you. It's a lot, you know, and I think that a just society takes care of the marginalized communities of their society. And I think that in Portland, Oregon, where we say we're compassionate and we're diverse and we care about people, I think the Bureau of Labor and Industries, the thing that they can do is help us get back to work. We want to work. We don't want handouts. We want to work.
So I heard a number of stories at the rally on the 17th on Thursday of trans people telling how difficult it was for them to get any kind of secure living wage, benefited, union represented jobs, and let alone any job, and just bouncing from staffing agency to staffing agency. And we don't really know the actual statistical unemployment rate or employment rates among trans people, because nobody's done the work, right, to find that out. But it's got to be really high.
Yeah, it's very high. I've heard statistics of something like 60% of your homeless here are gender nonconforming people. I don't know what the unemployment rate, but if the unemployment rate of people of color is 25%, I could only imagine what it is for transgender people. And I know that before I transitioned, when I presented male in the world, I was very successful. You know, I didn't make less than $35,000 or $40,000 a year. Since transitioning, the jobs that I have gotten have not been very good. The pay rate's gone down and down. And the treatment I've received is that I should be grateful for any crumbs that I get. It's not that I'm welcomed or appreciated for my quality of work that I could do. It's that the first thing that is seen is my gender identity, and employers, especially in the private sector, discriminate. And my experience showed, and other people's, like you mentioned in the rally, showed that it happens in the government sector and other sectors as well. It's something that we learn to kind of deal with, something that we come to expect. And it, I guess, knowing what I know in school and the way that we have equal protections and how we have learned to accept and adapt to discrimination as the norm, just didn't rub me right. And so that's why I decided to speak out and say, hey, trans people want to work and we do have protections, and let's tell the people that can help us to work. I'm not against BOLI. I want to be very clear that I'm not against the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I think they do important work. I just want them to be understand that there's a lot of marginalized communities and they need to keep their eye on the ball for all of us.
So there was a couple dozen people there at the rally in front of the Bureau of Labor and Industries on Thursday the 17th, and a number of trans people spoke, provided testimony. There were also groups like Jobs with Justice that made solidarity statements, and then people signed on to a letter and took it upstairs to the 10th floor. Tell me what was in that letter.
The letter, I can read it. Is that okay? Okay, so did this letter. It's dated August 17th, 2017. It's an open letter to Brad Avakian, the commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and Charlie Burr, who I believe is the deputy.
He's communications.
Okay, he's the communications person for the Bureau of Labor and Industry. Hammond, I believe her name's Christy Hammond, was there, and she's the deputy commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And so we went upstairs after people spoke, and we attempted to deliver the letter that I'm about to read to Brad Avakian. The letter reads, "Please be advised that transgender people throughout the state of Oregon are and have been facing rampant employment discrimination, unequal treatment in employment, and major disparities in education and training. Due to these facts, and because it is apparent that you are either unaware of or unwilling to correct these obvious disparities, we demand, number one, you hire transgender specialists to identify and establish a plan to correct the current transgender employment disparity in Oregon. Number two, provide free job training and placement programs for transgender Oregonians. Number three, require education and training for employers on transgender oppression, discrimination, and protection. And number four, hold a series of on-the-record public hearings throughout the state with time/space for public comments, as well as regular reports on the progress in correcting transgender employment disparities. Time is of the essence, as real transgender people's lives depend on it. You may send your written response to," and I listed a P.O. box for the commissioner to respond.
So what kind of response did you get?
I haven't received a response yet. We gave the commissioner the letter on the 17th, and today is the 23rd. The responses that we got were preemptive responses, where the Charlie Burr, the communications person, defended the work that BOLI's done, and believes that that they're doing a good job, and we don't believe that. So I'm waiting for a response, after we've delivered this.
So what can our listeners do to be helpful or be in touch?
Sure. Your listeners can get in touch with me. I would like emails. I'm going to spell it for them. My name is Brooklyn, and it has two N's. It's Brooklynn. Clark is my last name, Clark, @mail.com, mail.com. Okay, so I'm going to spell the whole thing out one more time so that if you want to get involved, you can shoot me an email. I'll get you in a list, and we're going to have meetings. We don't want to broadcast our next move, but we definitely want to meet with you and people that are passionate about equal employment. So my email address again is brooklynclark@mail.com. Thank you.
All right, Brooklyn Clark, transgender employment discrimination activist and overall wonderful person. Thank you, Brooklyn.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And that wraps it up for Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday, 6 o'clock, the only program of its type in Oregon or Southwest Washington. Thanks to our engineer, and stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
Yeah, it'll be...
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Tonight, my guests are Jessica Katz, the director of the Family Preservation Project at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility in Wilsonville, and Nova